All right, back on AI Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. The liberal mom writes in, Bush ultimately was a decent Christian man compared to Trump, but people forget about the atrocities committed on his watch. Tom Zawaki says, don't you think people when asked the question immediately compare Bush to Trump and think, oh, he wasn't bad at all? I'm sure that it was certainly a part of it, and that was to John's point about how everything seems fine now after Trump by comparison. And Brian Newton says, Bush will never get a pass. He started this shit. Trump was emboldened by these neocons. That is certainly true as well. Member shoutouts today are Thomas Sanderson and Connie Rosette. Okay, and today in the post game will be a little light. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about a food that is excellent and potentially underrated.
I also have a post game topic.
Oh,
we're gonna talk about hygge. It's a Danish thing.
Hygge.
Hygge.
Okay, my thing is almost related to Danish as well. Okay, so okay. And Aggressive Progressive, you know, is on tomorrow, but Judah Friedlander is on it, which is pretty cool. And he is going to talk about his next special on Netflix for Halloween. And Jim Katie, running for office in New Jersey's 4th District, is also on. Members get all the Aggressive Progressive, of course, and all the post games as well. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member. Go.
All right. Remember when members of Congress were considering regulating certain things like bump stocks following the mass shooting that occurred in Las Vegas? Well, if you've forgotten, so have members of Congress, because nothing has been done. And the shooting took place weeks ago, and every passing day it becomes less and less likely that they will do something to ban or regulate bump stocks. Now, bump stocks are essentially devices that are utilized to turn a semi-automatic weapon into a weapon that acts as an automatic weapon. And so this is an issue, and that is exactly what was used by the Las Vegas mass shooter. Now, there were some attempts, there were examples of legislation that were written by both members of the House and the Senate, but they have gone nowhere. So for example, a bill was introduced by Representatives Carlos Curbelo and Seth Moulton, and it had 20 co-sponsors in total, 10 Democratic and 10 Republican. So it was a bipartisan effort, but aides say that there is no indication that the House Judiciary Committee is going to consider that bill. That's based on reporting by Sam Stein at the Daily Beast. Now, the NRA even came out and said, okay, we're open to regulating bump stocks, but they did something, I would argue something clever, and we didn't realize it at the time. So essentially what the NRA said was, maybe the ATF should be in charge of regulating it. But the ATF is not a regulatory body. It's not Congress. They're not able to write and pass legislation. That is the job of Congress. And essentially what the NRA did there was give Congress a pass. So if they do nothing, they can just be like, well, it's the ATF that's supposed to do something about it. ATF responds and says, no, we don't write laws. We don't draft legislation.
No, it goes a little further than that, because it sounds like, well, ATF's an executive branch, and so they might be able to regulate. But there is a specific law forbidding the ATF from regulating this issue. So they know that. So they go, okay, this will be a cute little trick. We'll say that we're in favor of regulating bump stocks, and everybody will report that on the front page. Oh, NRA being reasonable, moderate NRA, etc. But we know that when they go to do a bill, we'll tell everybody, we'll spend, you know how much the NRA spent on the last election? $50 million, almost all going to Republicans. So then we'll tell all the Republicans, don't you dare do legislation, go to the ATF instead. And it'll seem like, oh, what, they're doing regulation, they're bringing it to the ATF. But they already know that the ATF cannot regulate it based on a previous law. So it is a complete dirty trick. So they're laughing at you for all the people who died during using this, in essence, fully automated automatic weapon, going, we tricked you. And you know how many people died? So not only did we have 58 people who were dead in just Las Vegas alone, but 546 people were injured. He mowed down 600 people. You know why? When you have the bump stock, you can fire 800 bullets in a minute.
But people need that for like hunting and stuff.
Totally. When a swarm of deer or bunnies attack you, you really need to be able to fire 800 bullets in a minute. The only reason to fire 800 bullets in a minute is to murder as many humans as possible. Doesn't help you with hunting. And if an intruder comes in, you really need 800 bullets fired in a minute. Okay? So no, it is to murder people. And the NRA, they are merchants of death. They profit off of death. So they think it's really cute to trick you guys after your loved ones have died. And you think, well, okay, I mean, that was one off. I mean, Jesus, that was a really bad incident, but does that happen all the time? Of course, not only do we have the mass shootings that happen literally every day. Last year, 2016, there were more mass shootings than there were days in the year. That's when more than four people get shot at one time. But since the Vegas shooting, there have been 900 people killed from gun homicides, for gun related deaths. And it hasn't even been a month, it's just been 3 weeks. So they know that, and they know that people die from this. And some of it is obviously that Vegas was bump stocks. The others are normally just handguns. And they make money every time. They don't care that your family members die. And so they bought off all these politicians. And these politicians like Paul Ryan, who said, oh no, no, I'm gonna kill the bill. There's no way we're voting on that bill.
Let's just not waste our time anymore, right? So every time there's a mass shooting, let's go ahead and cover it and give you guys the details and the facts of how many people were gunned down because of inaction in Congress and a refusal to do anything because they're getting their pockets padded by people, you know, running the NRA. But let's not talk about legislation anymore. Let's not waste our time. Because every single time there's a mass shooting, by the way, again, 900 people have died due to gun violence since the Vegas shooting. Doesn't matter, since it's not 58 people at a time, it doesn't even get any coverage anymore. It's become so commonplace in the US. But I'm just tired of having the same conversation over and over again. Yeah. It's gonna lead to nowhere. There's nothing to be done, okay? And the people in power in this country have no empathy and no sympathy for individuals who A, lost their lives, or the family members who lost their loved ones as a result of this inaction by our lawmakers. No, and so it's just, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of having this nonsensical, you know, conversation over and over again. It's beyond frustrating.
So look, this is why I harp on money in politics, because that's the answer. This isn't about gun control. We don't live in a democracy. If we lived in a democracy, we would have gun control right now. Associated Press recent poll, 61% of people say they favor tougher gun laws. When you make it specific and say federal background checks, the number jumps to 93%, okay? Now, but overall, just vague, gun laws, are they good enough? 61 say no, they're not good enough, make them tougher. 27% say they should remain unchanged. Only 11% want them to be looser. So in a democracy, the 61%, certainly the 93% would win super easy. But we don't live in a democracy. We have privatized the elections. So I mean, we talk about privatizing things they shouldn't do, like healthcare. Are you kidding me? We privatized the entire government. So it is privately financed elections. So Paul Ryan, the Republicans that are in charge, take that money. They spend it largely in TV ads, and then all of a sudden TV loves money in politics. They don't cover the corruption ever, and they buy these elections by having a lot more money. And then they turn around and go, 93% want a federal background check. I don't care. I don't care what you stupid voters want. The Koch brothers gave me money. NRA gave me money. I do as they tell me to do. They're the one who put me in office by running all those deceptive ads, pretending that I was on your side, when in fact, I literally make money off of you dying, whether it's in healthcare or in the NRA situation. So Anna's right. The next time, it doesn't matter if
it doesn't matter. Every time there's a mass shooting, we all know how it's going to play out. And look. And every single time each one of us goes through TSA when we're trying to travel and we're getting groped and we're you know, going through these scanners and exposing ourselves to radiation and having these, like, you know, semi-nude images taken of us, we go through all of that out of fear that, you know, the bad actors might take advantage of a lack of security, right? But when it comes to an issue like this, doesn't matter how many people get gunned down in any type of mass shooting. Doesn't matter if it was 500 people who died rather than getting injured. Doesn't matter, nothing would have changed. When those kids died, nothing was done. 58 people were gunned down recently, nothing was done. The death toll, I guarantee you, will be higher in the future, and nothing will be done. Nothing will be done, because who cares? American lives mean nothing to our politicians compared to the amount of money that they can receive from corporations and lobbying groups like the NRA.
So to give you context on these numbers, in 3 months, you'll have as many people dead, actually in less than 3 months, as you had on 9/11, just from gun violence. And yes, it is an absolute fact, and you track this through all the different countries that have different gun laws, that the stricter the gun control is, the less people die from gun deaths. And it's also super obvious, but it's backed up by overwhelming data. So those people die to the scale of 9/11 every 3 months. Anna's right. We go through, oh my God, the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber, both of them unsuccessful. Oh no, we can't even take 1% chance. Take off your jacket, your belt, strip down naked, or do all this stuff. Well, how about the 4 9/11s that happen every single year because of gun violence? Nope, no way. We can't even regulate it even 1%. It's the exact opposite, right? You're on a terrorism watch list, doesn't matter, you get to buy guns. You have mental problems, it doesn't matter, you get to buy guns. You want to buy fully automatic guns in essence now and shoot 800 bullets a minute? Yes, sure. You want to murder cops with armor piercing bullets while we pretend to be for Blue Lives Matter? It doesn't matter. You want to be a criminal and make sure that your guns can't be tracked by your fingerprints? Great, let's make you criminal, allow you to be criminals easier. And then they say, oh, well, no, gun control doesn't work because, like, look, California has slightly tougher gun laws, but there's still violence with using guns in California. And I always say, we're in an ocean of guns, right? So you know what they did? They did a study in the Annals of Internal Medicine that was just released on Tuesday. Deaths and injuries in California towns after a gun show held in Las Vegas. So it's a California town kind of near Las Vegas. They're not California towns that close to Las Vegas. But still, after the gun show in Vegas, the towns in California, their gun deaths and injuries jump by 70%.
That's weird, Cenk, but I thought if one state had stringent gun laws, then there would be no gun violence, right? Because we have gigantic walls on the border of every state, and we're not one country. We're just all these separate states that have their own governing bodies and have gigantic walls that prevent, you know, any guns from going. We're one country. That argument drives me absolutely insane because it's disingenuous, right? When people say, oh, well, you know, this one city or this one state has strict gun laws, that city or state's laws don't fucking matter when you consider the fact that we are swimming in guns, when you consider the fact that people can buy pretty much as many guns as they want at the back of a truck at a gun show. So no, you need a comprehensive approach. You need a federal approach, okay? The gun laws in a local level don't matter at all, at all.
All right, so last thing on this, guys.
It's just so frustrating. Okay,
and the last thing the TV does, which is the propaganda they do that drives me crazy is, they say, well, look, you gotta understand, it's the culture of America and it's the old West and that's how this country came up and that's why people love their guns. No, 93% of Americans want a federal background check. You are 100% wrong about the culture of America. It has nothing to do with the culture. Yes, there's a portion of the culture that loves guns, I understand that. But is it the majority of the country? No, it's not, we have polling to prove it. What it is the corruption. The gun manufacturers bought the politicians, so they don't care. What do you want? 99% they agree on a federal background check? That's not the issue. The issue is that we have privatized financing of elections and they work for those private interests, including the gun manufacturers. So it doesn't matter if 58 people were killed or 158 people were killed in that incident. Doesn't matter if it was 900 or 9,000 people who die every 3 weeks. The Republicans, and yes, a good portion of the Democrats, will continue to vote based on the checks that they received, because that is the system we set up, based on complete and utter corruption.
All right, moving on. A deputy in Florida has been arrested following the release of video surveillance showing him burglarizing the home of an elderly man who suffered a fatal injury during the hurricane. Now, this deputy apparently showed up to the scene after the sons of this elderly man found that he was unresponsive following an injury that he suffered. He shows up with a group of cops and realizes that this man is going to be rushed to the hospital. Unfortunately, he died a couple hours later. 90 minutes after police had initially showed up to the scene, Deputy Jason Cook came back to the home and proceeded to burglarize it. So Deputy Jason Cook was taken into custody last week on burglary and grand theft with a firearm charges for allegedly robbing the home of 85-year-old Mo Rosoff, who fell during the storm and later died. The sheriff's deputy allegedly found the garage code in a dispatch log and used it to gain access to the home 90 minutes after paramedics took the gravely injured man to the hospital. So the paramedics showed up to the scene initially. Now, the footage that we're about to show you is from a camera that was set up in the home by the family members of the elderly man who tragically passed. And they wanted to do that to kind of keep an eye on him and make sure that he was okay. Well, they noticed that there was a cop who showed up to the home. And at first they thought, oh, he's trying to help out. Maybe he's trying to get the medication for our father. But it turned out, no, he wanted to steal their father's medication in addition to cash and jewelry. So we have a little bit of that footage for you. We'll show it with our mics up because I want to talk over it. And it just shows this cop going through all of the stuff, like going through all the cabinets and going through drawers. In one part of the footage, you can see him popping a pill in his mouth. He later goes into the master bedroom, and that's where the jewelry was, and the family members are saying the jewelry is now missing.
So, by the way, it took the other cops from this same town 5 weeks to actually arrest this guy. Now, if you went into somebody else's house and they had video of you stealing things super clearly, do you think it takes 5 weeks to arrest you? Or perhaps they get to it right away. And then they were still trying to deduce whether he did drugs on the job. We see him popping the pill into his mouth in uniform while on the job.
Yeah.
It's not complicated. Later, they confiscated more drugs from his patrol car. This is not a complicated question. And he apparently did this all the time. And think about what a bad guy this guy is. Because at that time, look, if the guy is dead, it's still horrible, 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 right? But at the time, you don't even know the guy's dead. He's like, oh, good, somebody got injured.
Someone got injured, was rushed to the hospital. The house is empty. Let me go burglarize it.
So he is at his most vulnerable, and his family will probably want to comfort him too. They'll all go to the hospital, and so when they are suffering the most is when I'll rob them blind. By the way, I'm a cop. Now, to be fair, they did eventually arrest them.
5 weeks after the family members gave the cops that surveillance. Okay, just to give you the exact dates, the family reported the video to police on September 20th. Cook was not arrested until October 19th, nearly 5 weeks later. When the police department was questioned about that, they responded by saying that they wanted to ensure that he would go to rehab prior to his arrest.
And because they care so much about the people they arrest normally. Like when they're arresting African Americans, they're like, wait a minute, I just want to be really, really careful. Are you getting rehab first? Okay, now I get it. Look, they look out for each other because they're buddies. And no matter how, and this is an inarguable bad apple, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have anything to do with training or anything that we normally talk about. It's just a guy who's a criminal who happens to be a cop. And even then, they're like, okay, after we get him rehab though. Okay.
Yeah. And by the way, he clearly does need rehab. And look, I'm not going to treat him differently in regard to his drug addiction than other people. Like, he should get help, right? But he also did something criminal and he deserved to get arrested. I'm glad it eventually happened. But, you know, as we know, there is a two-tier justice system and they do tend to look out for their own. And just to give you some more details in regard to what officers found in his car through an investigation, his patrol car had 60 pills, including a narcotic painkiller. muscle relaxers and other medicine. Now, if he's taking that on the job, that is incredibly dangerous, especially if he's operating a vehicle and especially when he's in possession of a deadly weapon like a gun. So
yeah, when he's interacting with people and in stress, highly stressful situations, and he's got a gun on him, that is a recipe for disaster. So luckily he's off the streets now.
All right, we got to take a break. Let's do that. And when we come back, more stories for you, including millennials. They're ditching traditional religion, but they now believe in other things. What are those other things?
And the opioid story that we're going to give you has stunning facts. Mm-hmm. I love the facts in this story, and I think that it's going to be really eye-opening for you guys. We'll do that when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks. I want to get to more stories, so let me just read only one tweet here. Ryan Zephyr says, if a bunch of little children can be gunned down and Congress still won't pass gun control, then they are never going to pass it. It's actually worse than that. I mean, it doesn't get any worse than Sandy Hook, but we've had mass shootings, and then we had Muslims doing mass shootings. You would think that that might actually get someone to act, right? Then we had a Democratic congresswoman shot in the head, and then we had a Republican congressman shot, and then we had Las Vegas, and then we had Sandy Hook with all those kids dying, and still nothing. There is literally nothing that will move this Congress as long as they keep getting those checks.
That money is so sweet that Representative Scalise could not turn his back on the NRA. Like, imagine that.
Yeah,
right?
He'll take a bullet for that money. Okay, all right, now let's get to some amazing stories.
All right. The opioid epidemic continues to destroy parts of the country and various families throughout the country. And there are people who are now taking matters into their own hands in an effort to help those prevent overdosing on heroin. Now, prescription painkillers are obviously different from heroin, but oftentimes individuals who can no longer access opioids will turn to heroin because of their addiction. And Hector Mata, who is a former security guard in New York, realized that there was this ongoing trend of people overdosing on heroin in public bathrooms. And so he and a number of colleagues decided to launch something known as Corner Project in New York. And they are taking an incredibly liberal and somewhat of a controversial approach in preventing overdoses. So what they do is they essentially provide a needle exchange program, meaning that if someone wants to inject heroin, they provide clean needles to prevent the spread of diseases and infections. But what they also do is they allow the individuals who show up to use their bathroom to inject the heroin. And the reason why they do that is because they know, well, it's either going to be our bathroom or some other bathroom. And if they're going to use our facility, we can at least check in on them and make sure that they don't overdose. So they set up an intercom system, and every 3 minutes they check in on the individual in the bathroom. If they don't get a response, they will find a way to get back into the bathroom. And if the person is overdosing, they are supplied with Narcan to help them immediately. And as a result, they have prevented 25 people from overdosing. And this is modeled after a different project in Canada. And the project in Canada has also been a success. It's been around for a while, and it has actually helped decrease the number of heroin overdoses in that particular area. And we'll get to those numbers in just a second, but I wanted you to jump in, Cenk.
Yeah, so some people say, oh my God, they know that people are doing heroin in there and they still allow it, that's so terrible. But over 90% of the people who get the heroin will use it in a public bathroom or out in the streets. So either they're going to do it somewhere else, and then some percentage of those people will die. That's a guarantee. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to do it in your bathroom, and you're going to save their lives. How is this a difficult question? And the people that sometimes criticize folks who save people's lives by giving them a tiny safe space to do that will say, "Oh, you're leading to their you're enabling their addiction." They're going to get it anyway because they're addicted. You might as well save their lives. You know who's enabling their addiction? Big Pharma.
Absolutely.
That started the addiction in the first place.
Can I give you an incredible stat that I actually didn't even know about, even though we've reported on this several times? We know that the opioid epidemic is huge in the United States. Prescription painkillers. Well, A recent study found that, let's go to graphic 12, we consume more than 80% of the world's supply of opioid pain pills, even though we are less than 5% of the world's population. 80% of the world's opioid supply.
Okay, do you want to know why? It's not just that Big Pharma is located here in America. It's that we have laws that allow them to push those drugs on people and market it, could create pill mills, distribute it, etc. Other countries actually care about their citizens. Some of them actually live in democracies that don't privately finance elections. So they say, oh, well, then I'm not going to let you distribute it in this way, a pill mill. No, I'm not going to allow that. Mm-hmm. But here, I mean, we have legal drugs pouring into the Appalachians, and there's another story we covered, and also all across the country. And the government goes, wait, am I getting my check from pharma? Oh yeah, that's right, they're the number one donors to politicians in this country. So they go, yeah, have at it, Hoss, do whatever you want. We just did a story about how they deregulated in the middle of the opioid crisis.
That's right, April of 2016, Congress, with the help of Representative Tom Marino, decided to strip the DEA of its ability to suspend suspicious drug shipments to, rogue pharmacies and to these pill mills. That's insane. It's not something that happened in the early 2000s and it led to the opioid epidemic. It's something that was passed in the middle of the opioid epidemic. Again, April of 2016 is when Congress passed this legislation.
Guys, politics matters, laws matter. If we had better laws to regulate legal opioids, we wouldn't have 80% of the overdose deaths from those opioids in the entire world. That is, if one of your family members died from that, it is because we allow legalized bribery in America. So more amazing facts. Did you know that 3 out of 4 new heroin users started with prescription narcotics? So gateway drug, all my life they told me marijuana was a gateway drug. It turns out marijuana does not lead to heroin. There is no evidence of that. But 3/4 of the people who were hooked on heroin came from the gateway drug of legal opioids. But since they're the number one donors to politicians, gateway drug, who gives a damn? You know that as many people die from opioid abuse of legal drugs as illegal heroin? We know exactly what's going wrong, but our politicians, as usual, go, as long as I'm getting a check, I don't give a damn how many people die. It's right out in the open.
So in the United States, we have outlawed safe injection sites, meaning Corner Project cannot identify as a safe injection site. However, they can legally do a needle exchange program, which is what their organization does. It's just that if someone says that they would like to use the restroom to do what they want to do, they won't deny them access to that. And it's a conscious decision. It was a well thought out decision because they want to save lives. And it's modeled after a program in Canada, as I mentioned earlier. And I want to give you the stats on that because I think it's important. So the program in Canada is known as Insight. Let's go to graphic 17. It has seen more than 3 million people since it opened, and it's treated over 6,000 overdoses, and not a single person has died after getting the treatment. Now, what they do is they offer the safe injection site, but more importantly, they offer rehabilitative services, meaning they will counsel these individuals to try to get them the help that they need so they can beat the addiction. And it's really, really important that they do that, and it's working. So for instance, a 2011 Lancet study revealed that in the neighborhoods surrounding Insight, this is in the Toronto area, in the 2 years after it opened, there was a 35% reduction in overdose deaths from the 2.5 years before it opened, compared with the 9% drop in the in the rest of Vancouver. I apologize, this is Vancouver, not Toronto. It has led to an increased admissions for addiction treatment and detoxification. So that last part is the most important because yes, some might, raise an eyebrow at the idea of providing a safe injection site, but it's much more than that. It not only prevents these overdoses, but it gives these individuals the education and the tools necessary to equip themselves to get better. And that's what matters.
So look at how insane our country is. we have a model in Canada where they have prevented deaths from 6,000 overdoses, and it leads to people getting better in some of the instances, way better than if it didn't exist. So it works. We go, that's bad, evil, evil. It's encouraging drug use. Now, on the other hand, you have the legal opioid business that actually encourages drug use, actually leads to 3/4 of the addictions and deaths. And they go, oh, that's great, that's wonderful.
You know
they don't care about drugs, they don't care about you. All they care about is, where's my money?
And by the way, you know what else also encourages drug use? Those Ask Your Doctor commercials that we've all seen. Like, oh, do you have a little bit of a headache? Well, here is a medication you should ask your doctor about. Side effects include addiction, heart palpitations, like diarrhea, whatever, like a bunch of different things. But ask your doctor about it. Ask your doctor about this drug and that drug. There's a drug for everything. And so that's also an issue. I mean, if we're really worried about abusive drug behavior, we should take a good hard look at our pharmaceutical industry. All right, let's move on to other news. Honolulu is the first major US city that is planning on fining individuals for texting while walking. This is known as Honolulu smartphone zombie law. And what they want to do is keep people safe by making sure that they're paying attention to where they're walking. And a lot of people, we've all experienced it, like to look down at their smartphones as they're walking around, and it could lead to unsafe situations. So this law now authorizes police to stop and fine pedestrians up to $35 for walking with their eyes glued to their phone screen. The law did pass. It is now in effect. It took effect today. So other US cities are also considering this type of legislation. Now, here's the reasoning behind it. Pedestrian deaths in the United States rose 11% in 2016 to nearly 6,000 people. And that's according to a report from the Governor's Highway Safety Association, which cited an increase in walking as a primary mode of transportation and distraction due to growing use of smartphone technology as potential factors for the jump. I want to be clear that their study doesn't show causation, but they are saying, all right, well, increased use of smartphones, increase number of deaths for pedestrians, there could be a link.
Yeah, I believe there is. And so that's a combination of the actual numbers and my opinion. 11% is a pretty significant jump in a year. And you all know it, you see it all around you. And by the way, don't get me wrong, I've done your drug. As Oprah once famously said, I also look at my phone on the sidewalk. I'm in favor of this law. It depends
No, hold on.
It depends on how it's applied. If you look at your phone while walking, that's a fine. No, I disagree. But if you're crossing a road and looking at your phone, I agree, you should be fined. That's my rule. I do look at my phones on the sidewalk, but when I get to a crosswalk, ain't nobody got time to die. Okay. If you keep looking at your phone, you're inviting disaster. So go, disagreement.
I 100% disagree with you. I mean, especially like when you put this kind of law in the context of inaction by Congress with mass shootings and stuff, like really, this is where the attention is going? People using their smartphones while they're walking? First of all, I use my smartphone while I'm walking all the time. Because time is money, and when I'm walking my dog, I don't have the luxury of just enjoying the walk with my dog. I gotta answer email, I gotta look up stories, I gotta get my shit done, okay? I don't need the government up my ass about what I'm looking at while I'm walking. And you're right, how are they gonna enforce it? So how long do I have to be looking at my phone before they decide they wanna fine me? Right? And what if, are they specifying that this is when you're walking across the street? It doesn't seem like they are. It seems like as long as you're a pedestrian and you are walking in a public space and you're looking at your phone, you could deal with this fine. And no, it's unacceptable. I think it goes way too far.
So do you use it while you're on the road though?
On the road?
Like, do you look down when you're on the road? When you're crossing a street.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Whatever.
Okay, all right. No, not whatever.
That's my life, okay? So if I get run over while I'm looking at my phone, that's on me. I don't need the government telling me like when I can look at my phone, how long I can look at my phone, where, like, what is it? Is it like the new cigarette situation? Mm-hmm. Like I need to be in a specified like smartphone safe zone in order to look at my smartphone. No, it's too much. It's too much.
I hear you, Libertarian Anna, but on the other hand, the laws that we passed on smoking in California saved what, hundreds of thousands of lives or millions of lives?
Okay, but my point is, my smartphone is not gonna cause lung cancer, and it's also not, you know, gonna cause cancer for other people around me.
Yeah.
Like, let me look at my phone when I'm walking. It's just, I don't know, it just goes too far. And I get it, people get annoyed, right? Drivers get annoyed, people get annoyed. Whatever, live with it. That's
so
what life
the
is all
annoyed
about,
is different
annoying people everywhere.
The annoyed is different from safety. And by the way, you're very right to point out, it's hard to figure out where to draw the line. So for example, I'm in favor of the anti-smoking laws indoors, etc., that I think have saved countless lives in America. I'm in favor of making you put your seatbelt on, that has saved millions of lives in America. On the other hand, when Bloomberg went to, I don't want you to drink large sodas, he lost me. Like, okay, I don't drink large soda, so it's not my issue. But really, we're figuring out how much Coke you're drinking? It seems like it's too far. So, and there's 10 different states, and I'm sure that they're considering bills like this, and I'm sure they've all got different variations.
Can I give you another example?
Yeah, go.
Yeah, okay. So New Jersey is also considering a fine in addition to jail time.
No, don't do that. That's crazy.
No, this is. But this
I draw the line.
Look, I get it. Slippery slope arguments are weak, right? But when it comes to our so-called justice system, I think slippery slope arguments make a lot of sense, because time and time again, we've seen examples of, you know, local governments, state governments, you know, the federal government criminalizing nonviolent behavior, and this is exactly what's happening here. Really, jail time for people looking down at their smartphones? Absurd.
Another argument on your side is selective enforcement, which, because you know it's going to happen.
Yes.
They're not going to go to Rumson, which is a really nice town in New Jersey, and start arresting people for looking at their cell phones unless they want a lot of trouble on their hands, right? What are they going to do? They're going to go to Camden and Newark and those places and go, oh, you looked at your cell phone. Good. We got to make our numbers. Here we go. So I hear you on the downsides to it.
Just let me live.
But I'm trying to make sure you live. Don't look at your phone while you're crossing the street.
Like, let me decide that, okay? Let me decide that. And let's move on.
Okay.
Let's move on to more important things other than policing smartphone usage.
Okay, let me just give two more examples though of things that I agree with that with regulations. In the Chinese city of Chongqing, I have no idea how, if I pronounce that right, they created cell phone lanes all the way back in 2014. So they're like, you're allowed to look at your phone, but you're holding everybody else up. So you go in the cell phone lane, and people who want to walk past you go in the other lane.
Smart.
Love it.
But
it's
a
smart phone.
The Chinese get it. They get it. They get it when it comes to solar energy. They get it when it comes to cell phone lanes.
The Chinese get it. And then in India, they introduced no selfie zones because people were dying. 127 selfie related deaths reported between March 2014 and September of 2016. So we've reported on this in the past, like in a dangerous area, they'll be taking a picture and then they'll fall off a cliff and die. Like, don't do that. And in India, there's a lot of folks, I don't know if you know that, and there'll be stampedes. Somebody's trying to take a selfie, it holds everybody up, and then people get crushed. So there are no selfie zones. So there are real safety issues. And I think that Hawaii, which is a very progressive state, probably had their heart in the right place. And I agree that you shouldn't look at your phone while crossing the street. And maybe I could live with a fine, but definitely not arrest, okay? And I would be worried about selective enforcement. But okay, we have a disagreement on that. You say under no circumstances.
I'm just so tired of being watched. Like, I'm tired of like the TSA, you know, like, all over our kibbles and bits. Like, I'm tired of, you know, like there are more important things to enforce and police other than cell phone usage. Like, it's just, I get it when you're driving. I absolutely get it, because you are in essentially a deadly weapon. You are operating a deadly weapon. So I am all in favor for legislation, laws that would prevent texting while driving, using your phone while driving. But it's different when you're walking, and it's a hard thing to enforce, because again, how long do you need to be looking at your phone? Selective enforcement is absolutely gonna happen. And again, for the billionth time, just let me live.
Okay, I will summarize with two Anna-isms in this story. No one wants the government in their ass. And Let her live and let her die.
Just let me decide that.
Okay. All right, what's next?
All right. Millennials are less likely to believe in organized religion compared to previous generations. However, they are increasingly in favor of and in belief of certain non-traditional religions or whatever.
Spirituality.
Yeah, they like spirituality. Yeah. This is a very devastating story for me.
I don't think so. I think this is overhyped, but let's do the numbers and then we'll discuss.
Okay, so millennials like witchcraft and—
No, they don't.
And astrology.
No, they don't.
Okay, and when I say that, it's a generalization. When you actually look at the number, it's not the majority of millennials, but an increasing number of millennials are inclined to believe in astrology and to some extent also witchcraft. So the percentage of people between the ages of 18 and 29 who never doubt the existence of God fell from 81% in 2007 to 67% in 2012, which is pretty significant.
Okay, and remember, that's 2012. 5 years later, that number is way lower, I guarantee it. And we've seen it in other polls of all Americans. So I find that phenomenon to be fantastic.
That's good.
So, right, it was like a huge deal a couple of years ago when 14% of Americans said they no longer believed in religion. That number this year jumped to 24%. So this thing is taking off like a rocket. How many times do I have to be right?
Okay,
how many
times? Let's move on.
Okay, anyway, okay. All right. Now, all right, let's get to the bad side.
More than half of young adults in the United States believe astrology is a science, compared to less than 8% of the Chinese public. Okay, I don't know why there was like that needless comparison to China, but nonetheless.
It's rubbing our face in it. The Chinese believe other absurd things, by the way. So they just happen to pick astrology because the Chinese aren't that into astrology. On the other hand, they think some percentage of Chinese believe that tiger penis will make you hard if you eat it. Okay, so
have you tried though?
No, I have not. I can assure you. Okay, so everybody has different kooky ways of thinking, but is it that it is increasing dramatically? There's not great evidence to that. They're just saying half of young people believe in astrology. Well, it could have been that a decade ago, 2/3 of them believe in astrology. So it's not great evidence in this article from MarketWatch, to be honest.
So there are these things known as metaphysical boutiques that are in hip, trendy areas throughout the country.
I believe.
And the owners have said that they've experienced an uptick in clientele over the last 5 years, especially among New Yorkers in their 20s. These stores offer workshops like Witchcraft 101, Astrology 101, and spirit seance. So
I have seen that. Look, to be fair, mm-hmm. I have seen an increase in spirituality, which is a good thing, right?
Yeah, I don't begrudge
anybody's spirituality or faith.
Yeah.
I just, the religions are wrong. So if they've gotten rid of religion and they have a different faith or spirituality and it's their own, God bless their hearts, maybe literally. Now, on the other hand, sometimes it takes some forms I don't agree with, right?
You're right. I don't know why I'm needlessly being harsh and salty with this story. Because the people who believe in astrology are not trying to dictate my life with their astrology stuff,
yeah.
Right? So I just need to calm down. I think the reason why this story rubbed me the wrong way is I hate when people think they know you based on what your sign is. First of all, I hate when people ask me what my sign is. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me what my sign is, it doesn't matter, because it says nothing about me. And then if I do happen to answer their question and humor them for a bit, it's like, oh, well, it turns out that you are actually this type of person and that type of person. No, you actually know nothing about me, and my sign doesn't mean shit. So,
okay,
anyway,
definitely,
that's why
we got cranky Anna today. Whatever you do, don't try to pick up Anna with what's your sign. So, look, I don't believe in astrology. I don't think that that everyone born at the same time all act the same way and will have the same things happen to them. That is a really preposterous thing to believe. But I get that a lot of people believe it. I love you, brothers and sisters. And then there's the folks who believe that there is energy everywhere and you could like move it around and stuff by doing this. I love you, but
we got to talk about this in the post game. I have stories. We have to.
Okay, tytnetwork.com/join to hear more seance stories. And that's going to be fun. That's for the members. Okay, now So I don't happen to believe that, and I think it's kind of goofy, I gotta be honest with you. The witchcraft people, like witchcraft, ridiculous with flying around rooms, they're actually more into nature. They're actually some of the more sensible ones of these different beliefs.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, they're not actually brewing anything over a pot, right?
They're not flying on brooms.
Right, they actually are trying to respect nature, etc. And then finally, the only stat they had on here was that they said the psychic services industry grew 2% between 2011 and 2016. And it's now worth a $2 billion. It's a $2 billion industry. If it only grew 2%, it was also a $2 billion industry in 2011. You see what I'm saying? It didn't move much. So I believe that there is a little bit of movement towards some beliefs that I don't subscribe to, and I have to confess, sometimes find goofy. Okay, but would I rather have them believe in energy and tarot cards, or that we should all kill each other because some rabbi or mullah said it 2,000 years ago? Ooh, tarot cards. What's your sign? Okay, way better than the old religions that are totally wrong and often lead to violence. Fair enough?
Sure.
Even cranky Anna agrees. Okay, so apparently we got a doozy for you guys today in the post game. Yes. Tarot cards, hygge, whatever that is, and I'm looking forward to what it is. And the underrated food of the day. Apparently I haven't been on old school enough. I gotta get it out. So tytnetwork.com/join to hear all that. And of course you get all the other shows, including Aggressive Progressive, that has Judah Friedlander on the show this episode. And also a progressive congressional candidate from my home state of New Jersey, which is going to be lovely. So check that out. Check out all the shows that we have for you under membership, and all of it ad free. All right, God bless, go forward.
Bye-bye.